On Thursday, the 15th of May, The Spectator is hosting a live book club event. Sam Leith will be joined by former Telegraph editor-in-chief and military historian Max Hastings. It will be an opportunity to talk about Max's new book, Sword, D-Day, Trial by Battle, as well as mark the 80th anniversary of VE Day. The full details are as follows. 7:30 on Thursday the 15th of May at the Shaw Theatre in Euston, London, and tickets start from £27.50, although I believe there are ticket options that include a signed copy of the book. For those tickets, go to www.spectator.co.uk/bookslive. We look forward to seeing you there.
Welcome to Holy Smoke, the Spectator's religion podcast. I'm Damien Thompson.
Annuncio vobis gaudium magnum. Habemus papam. Eminentissimum, ac reverendissimum Dominum, Dominum Robertum Franciscum, Sancte Romanae Ecclesiae, Cardinalem Prevost, qui sibi nomen imposuit Leonem decimum quartum.
With those words, the papal election of 2025 came to an extraordinary and unprecedented end with the election of the first American Pope, Robert Francis Prevost, now Pope Leo XIV. A surprise, I think, both for liberals, conservatives, and those in the centre of the church, both sides of the conflict, if you like, claiming him, if not necessarily as one of their own, as somebody who will be sympathetic to them. Some people saying that Pope Leo, who spent nearly all of his ecclesiastical career as an Augustinian administrator and bishop in Peru, is a continuity candidate, a sort of Francis II. I don't actually believe that for a second, having seen him walk onto the loggia of St. Peter's wearing the traditional mozzetta that Francis rejected and having watched his mass this morning. Other traditionalists claiming that he's unexpectedly sympathetic towards the traditional mass and also far more orthodox in questions of doctrine than Pope Francis, something possibly borne out by his homily at the mass in the Sistine Chapel this morning. Anyway, I am joined here in Rome by my great friend, Father Benedict Keeley, a priest of the Ordinariate and one of the Catholic Church's leading campaigners for human rights and for the rights of persecuted Christians, as the founder of Nazarene.org. Welcome, Father Ben. Could I ask for your reactions, which I know are bound to be preliminary, but your initial reaction to the election of Pope Leo XIV?
Well, I was initially, thank you, Damien, I was initially stunned, as we all were, because I was prognosticating and pontificating that there was no way, possibly, that we'd have white smoke in one day, effectively one day. And of course, an American Pope was impossible. And both those were wrong. I am very impressed at the moment. I think we should give him certainly the benefit of the doubt, give him lots of time. He did all the right things. I had said earlier in the week, look at what he's wearing. People say, oh, that's superficial. It's not superficial at all. Francis deliberately chose not to wear the mozzetta, the pectoral new pectoral cross, etc., etc. He came out immediately wearing it. That's the first sign. He's saying, I'm not continuing that way. And then he gave the traditional blessing in Latin, which Francis also did not. And he chose a very interesting name, a continuity name, not with Francis, a continuity name with from Leo the Great all the way up to Leo the 13th, great popes. So I think there's a lot to be hopeful about.
Perhaps the analogy with Leo the 13th is interesting because he's remembered as a very orthodox pope, but also a social reformer. And that seems to be the mixture that we're presented with here. Pope Leo is clearly no MAGA fan. There's been quite a lot of fuss about a couple of tweets he sent out criticising the Trump administration, although he seems to have voted in a large number of Republican primaries. He's not actually a registered Republican, I think, because they don't have them in the state of Illinois, but that's puzzled people. In other areas, seems to be more conservative than Francis. For example, his comments about homosexuality, though that was actually never really one of Francis's issues, very firm on the fact that ordination of priests and deacons is reserved to men in the Catholic Church. But clearly somebody is a missionary who wants to continue Francis's legacy of identification with the marginalised and perhaps actually do something about identifying with the marginalised rather than simply calling for open borders. But let me not fall into the trap of point scoring. What do you think, Father?
I think he's going to surprise us. Because at the moment we're seeing all over the Twitter sphere, etc., that all the left are claiming him as Francis II, and a lot, unfortunately, on the right are claiming that because he's Francis II, they say it's going to be awful. We don't know, but things look good. He's clearly very, very intelligent. He speaks, of course, multiple languages. He speaks English, obviously, but that's important because Francis didn't speak English. You really can't have a pope now who can't speak English, Spanish, of course, Italian, perfectly good, perfect Italian, Latin. The mass this morning, his first mass was beautiful. He was holding, in fact, I think it's ferula or something, the correct term of it's his pectoral cross.
The ferula of Benedict
XVI. Yes, he was holding Benedict XVI.
And during the canon of the mass, during the congregation, he spoke the words in Latin.
Yes. So this is all very encouraging. So I really do believe that he's going to be a bridge builder. And someone attacked me last night for saying that, claimed it as James Martin's words. Well, actually, the title Pontifex means bridge builder. It's not James Martin who invented that. So the Pope, I think he's inherited a very divided church. Let's be brutally honest you've been brutally honest for years about the Francis pontificate, but we won't attack him now, but it's a divided church, very divided. And this man, I think, just from his style, his actions, those first words, I think he's going to try and heal those two the divisions in the church. He won't be a lefty. He won't be extremely conservative, but he will try. And that's not being wishy-washy. He will try and bring them together.
His sermon today was homily. It was very Christ-centred. Perhaps more so than many statements by Pope Francis, who often seem to veer off into more secular finger-wagging. I know we're not giving over this podcast to criticising him, but nonetheless, Francis II, this is not.
No.
He would have come onto the balcony wearing the same robes as Francis if he were going to do that. There have already been several signals that there will be elements of change. He's reappointed the heads of dicasteries, but only on a temporary basis. So clearly he wants to think carefully about who will run various Roman departments. One of the biggest topics of conversation has been his attitude towards the traditional Latin Mass. Now, there have been unverified reports at the moment, anyway, on Twitter that he has actually celebrated the old rite, which, if true, is very much at odds with the approach of Francis and is something that will come as a tremendous relief to traditionalists in the church who felt that Traditionis Custodes was a cruel and bullying measure that opened up completely needless wounds in the church. What do you think?
I would actually agree that it was completely cruel and it was ridiculous and useless, but it was also a sign of Francis, I'm afraid, but also many men in the church, the older men in the church who came of age, as it were, in the 1960s and 70s, have no clue that the growing church of young people are attending the old mass, the old liturgy. If this rumour is true, I pray it is true, if this rumour is true that he'd not just said it maybe once, that he regularly said it. I've spoken to many people in this last week in Rome, including your good self, who said they were single-issue voters, as it were. If the man is for the old mass, nothing else really matters. The point about that, I think, is if you say the old mass, if you're a celebrant of the old mass, your theology is going to be orthodox. So if we find out this is true, this is going to be a very, very good piece of news.
Well, the reason I think I did describe myself as a bit of a single-issue voter or whatever on that topic was it's something that the Pope can do something about. You know, sorting out the dreadful mess, the appalling betrayal of Chinese Catholics by Francis and Parolin is not something that can be done easily, to put it mildly. Sorting out the Vatican finances, goodness knows whether any Pope can do that without the most tremendous radical changes to the Vatican. But with a stroke of a pen, this Pope can lift the restrictions on the old Latin Mass. I don't expect him to do so, actually, immediately. And he might even confirm Arthur Roach in his position in the Dicastery for Divine Worship. But A, Arthur, whom, as you know, I can't bear, I mean, I quite admired him when he was an ice skater, but I can't bear him as a senior prelate, horrific appointment. But Arthur is A, 75, and B, an absolute opportunist. And if he thought that the new Pope wanted to relax the restrictions, then he'd be the first one to be calling for relaxation of that cruel ban. I wanted to raise one very sensitive subject. The reason that I was shocked, the reason my jaw dropped open yesterday when I heard Roberto Franciscus, whatever it was, I knew immediately that was Prevost. And the reason I was so astonished is that he had been written off. His star was in the ascendant early this year, very much. He was being pushed by a couple of very influential cardinals, and lots of people were talking about him as Papa Belay. And then the Pillar, a very influential and reliable Catholic publication, drew attention to allegations that in his Peruvian diocese of Chiclayo, I think it's called, he had failed to act against a priest or a couple of priests who abused women, and also there was a scandal involving a priest back in 2000 when Prevost was in an Augustinian in Chicago, and he apparently allowed this paedophile priest to be situated near to a children's school. And this is on the record, and he has failed to answer either of those quite serious inquiries in any detail, and not at all in the case of the Chicago priests. I did see an article in the Daily Mail about it this morning. I think it will be picked up. Do you think it will cast a shadow over the pontificate?
Oh, it will be picked up immediately because it's public knowledge. It's on public record. It's obviously, as you said, a very sensitive issue, but we've had, as you have documented very clearly, the covering up over the last 12 years of serious, serious sexual abuse, not just allegations, proven issues with Pope Francis. So this has to be addressed. He's going to, this will be one of the issues the media obviously will look at seriously. And hopefully he can come out very clearly and rapidly change the sort of atmosphere. I think our friend of Father Rupnik is probably doing you and I are old enough to understand, if I said he's doing a Ronnie Biggs at the moment, or maybe a John Stonehouse. Father Rupnik is on his way to Brazil because he's not got a friend anymore. So, yeah, it's any allegation. We're not alleging, of course, the allegations are that he didn't abuse anyone. But yes, he perhaps didn't deal as effectively as he should. And it's an issue that's got to be pursued.
Well, I think one would make a distinction between a failure to act against abusers, which is a really serious matter. And it's that he's been accused of. And sort of active complicity in sheltering convicted abusers, of which Francis was undoubtedly guilty. And I still think the international press should hang their heads in shame for failing to expose the sheer horror of Francis's behaviour, especially in the Zanchetta and Rupnik cases. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. Well, not inflating your ego, but you've tried for years and finally managed to get it into the mainstream media. It's shocking. It's scandalous. It's you always said, of course, that after Francis died, it would actually be revealed. But it should have been revealed a long, long time ago. There was a cover up by the mainstream media for Francis, which is really quite distressing.
Yes. What I'm picking up from conservative minded clerics in Rome at the moment is a sense of relief. And it's not just, I think, conservative-minded clerics, but perhaps throughout the whole church, at least those employed by the church, like yourself, Father, you know, priests, that there will be a very necessary return to business as usual, which doesn't mean that there won't be a need for reform and for quite drastic action, but a return to stability, because Francis ignored canon law. He made bizarre appointments. He made bizarre off-the-cuff statements. And I think that's ended, hasn't it?
Well, the other thing a few people have picked up on is Pope Leo, as we must learn to call him, is a canonist. I think this was very much part of the choice that the cardinals have realised. Basically, Pope Francis was a bit Trumpish in a different sort of way.
Yeah,
he was making executive orders day and night, changing things almost on a whim. This man is not going to do that. This man is a canonist. He will use the law of the church effectively. And yes, that sense of relief, I don't want to obviously attack the former pope, but it was hard work being an Orthodox priest, and all good priests and good bishops have said the same, because the atmosphere was not good.
Well, he attacked you all the time.
And, you know, I heard from, just this is not anecdotal, just this week in Rome, from two different people, priests who worked in the Vatican. They were asked, how are you feeling? And they both said, we're free. And that meant the atmosphere was oppressive. The press image, again, of Francis as being so kind and loving and friendly and warm. And actually, the truth, we must speak the truth, as Benedict XVI said in Love, Caritas in Veritate. The truth in love is he was not an easy man to work for. He was a very difficult man to work for, known to have great rages. This man, again, Pope Leo, he looks calm, he looks kind, he looks, as one man said to me last night, he looks popish. And I kind of like that.
He does, he does. He reminds me a little bit of the young John Paul II in the first couple of years of his papacy.
I think he looks a little, I mean, this is superficial, but he looks a bit like Pius XII. There's a little Pius XII to him as well. Well, a little. Maybe I'm seeing the wrong things.
Yes. But
no, I'm hopeful. That phrase, he looks popish, is people feel it's a sort of, I don't know what's the word, but it people get a sense, oh, he looks like the part.
Coming back to this issue of, you know, what will happen with traditionalist Catholics, I asked one pretty influential priest this morning here in Rome, and he said he didn't know, but he added, and this is a very telling phrase, he said, the new pope doesn't like hurting people, doesn't enjoy hurting people, unlike Francis and Roach. And some people on Twitter were saying that's a fairly low bar. Well, maybe it is, but it's a start, isn't
well,
it?
Well, I read also in Peru that apparently the church in Peru is quite divided in this hierarchy between very lefty bishops and sort of Opus Dei bishops. And apparently Bishop Prevost, as he was again a real bridge builder between them. He tried to keep both sides not happy, but so this is hopeful. This he will do the same thing for the worldwide church. And as I said, it doesn't mean being wishy-washy. It's not sort of Anglican sitting on the fence kind of thing. It is trying to be. He said in his homily this morning, Christ must be central. Christ, he I know someone could say, well, that's a bit, he's being very humble. We've had someone who was very humble, but Christ, I must decrease, John the Baptist kind of thing. I must decrease. Christ must be central. So I'm very hopeful.
Father Benedict Keeley, thank you very much.
Thank you, Damien.